From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program. The Nebraska legislature is off and running. Once again, we are now 3 days into the 60-day legislative session. Bills are being introduced, and already a lot to talk about. Thankfully, I will have a state senator joining me on the show today to give us an update and talk about issues that are before the legislature and what we might expect to see happen this year. And already drawing a lot of attention are various tax proposals to create both property and income tax reform, bills to address prison overcrowding, place bans on bump stocks and silencers, and a measure introduced by Senator Steve Hollerin of Hastings that would require the University of Nebraska Board of Regents to adopt policies guaranteeing free speech for all on college campus. And this, of course, stems from the ongoing debate and controversies across the country, but also locally at the University of Nebraska over incidents where people felt that conservatives have not been treated equally or fairly and had their free speech rights infringed on. And Senator Hollerin feels that this bill will help ensure that all students, whether they are conservative or liberal or anything else, that everyone is treated equally and has their free speech rights protected. This is LB 718, which is referred to as the Higher Education Free Speech Accountability Act, and it would require that the university sanction students or employees who participate in protests that infringe on others' rights to free speech. And this bill will likely only further this debate and conversation on whether this is necessary or needed, but Senator Hollerin, it's about creating transparency and having accountability. The bill spells out what must be part of the university free speech policy, including a statement that it is not the proper role of the campus to shield individuals from speech protected by the First Amendment. Also, according to the bill, speech and activities not protected by the First Amendment could still be restricted. And ultimately, this legislation is aimed at making sure that demonstrators and protesters or even university employees aren't infringing or taking away or stifling the free speech rights and First Amendment rights of students on campus because they don't like their beliefs. We want everyone to have free speech and have open debate, but when it's when that it crosses that line and other people are restricting the rights of others by not allowing them to speak or to listen to others who are speaking. So it's about finding that proper balance, and I think that's what's being done here with the Higher Education Free Speech Accountability Act guaranteeing free speech for all on the University of Nebraska's campus, and that protesters and demonstration are not infringing on the rights of others while those protesting exercise rights of their own. Senators have 7 more days to introduce legislation. They have the first 10 days of every year to introduce bills, and then they'll begin holding committee hearings on those bills. Every single bill, which is unique to Nebraska, every single bill is guaranteed a committee hearing. So senators will start having hearings for their bills in which people can make public comments and provide testimony, and those bills then have to get voted on by the different committees in order for the bill to be heard by the full legislature. And this year, it's a short 60-day working session, meaning senators will meet until about mid-April. And because it's a shorter session, basically only bills that are given a priority designation will be heard and scheduled for debate. And each senator gets to make one priority designation. And all signs are pointing to this year's session being dominated by discussions and debates on tax reform, property tax relief, prison reform, and of course, addressing the budget and figuring out how to close the growing deficit. Those are some of the challenges facing our lawmakers, but that's really just the tip of the iceberg. This year, we'll see everything from expanded gambling and human trafficking to pro-life issues and debates about abortion and taxpayer funding of abortion and education choice, and a great way to get timely updates and relevant information on everything pertaining to family, freedom, and life is to visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, where you can read articles, listen to radio programs, and sign up for emails so you can stay informed on the issues that matter most. It's going to be an exciting year, and I'm so thrilled to be joined today on the show by Nebraska's newest state senator, Teresa Thibodeau, representing District 6, right in the heart of Lincoln. Senator, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you on the program, and as I mentioned, you are Nebraska's newest state senator. You were appointed recently by the governor. I imagine that was an honor for you. What was that like to be selected by the governor to serve your district and your community in the legislature?
It was a great honor, and in fact, going through the application process, there were a lot of applicants that had put their names in. And so I thought when I put my name in, obviously I hoped that I received consideration. I did. I was called with a phone interview and then was called for the face-to-face interview. And when I got the phone call that he had chosen me to the appointment, I was very thrilled, very excited. I have a heart for serving the community, and this is just one more way that I felt I could serve the entire state.
Well, I know serving your community has been a big part of your background. Had you ever given much thought to public service before in official capacity, or was this a new adventure for you to undertake?
It was somewhat of a new adventure for me to undertake. I had done some public service with the City of Omaha Personnel Board, but of course that's not an elected position. Had done some service on some campaigns, but most of my community service has been with nonprofits. So it did take a while to decide to see if this would be the right time for me to jump into this. But at the end of the day, I felt that there are some very important issues that are facing our state, and I felt I could really make a big difference if I went ahead and threw my hat in to come down to Lincoln.
Well, and the Nebraska legislature just reconvened and started their new session this past week. So now you've been there for 3 days, and senators are introducing bills. And there are some big issues facing our state. What are your priorities as you're preparing to have more debates and review bills in the legislature, some things that you would like to see the legislature address?
Yeah. Well, and on the top of everybody's mind, of course, we are talking about budget and our budget, potential budget shortfall. Right now, it's, the numbers go back and forth, but it's projected at about 200 million. And so how are we going to balance our budget and also face the tax issues that are facing Nebraskans? We are hearing all over the state, property taxes are too high, income taxes are too high. How can we give relief to Nebraskans and balance our budget at the same time with making cuts that make sense? So obviously, senators do not want to go down there and just make cuts to make cuts. So we really need to look at everything that is going into our budget and see if there are areas that we can combine in order to save money or if there's areas of waste. And that is definitely going to be on the top of everybody's mind, and I think what everybody's going to really be focusing on.
Well, and you have a tough job as you're just entering, and most senators have at least 1 year under
Yes.
their belt. What has it been like for you personally, just adjusting to the crazy schedule of a state senator?
Well, as everybody says, it's like drinking from a fire hose. So my response is, well, I haven't drowned yet, so that means I'm doing well. The biggest adjustment probably is now the commute from Omaha to Lincoln and balancing that with the own small business that I own as well as my family life. And I feel that we've kind of, at least I had 2 months to sort of get my feet wet, start learning things, and figure out how we were going to balance those times work with my husband. He's been very supportive of me. I'm very thankful to him. And I think we have a good schedule going on with help, not only from my husband, but my extended family as well is very helpful. So it does make for very busy and very long days, but we say in our household, if we truly care about something, we figure out how we are going to make it work. So.
Absolutely. And I know one issue that we share a common passion for and that Nebraska Family Alliance works on has been the pro-life issue. And that's a value that you hold very, very dearly. Why is being pro-life an important part of who you are and in your work as a state senator?
Well, pro-life is very important to me, one, from the time I grew up. So I'm very lucky to have parents that instilled wonderful values into me. I I take those values to heart. I love children. So if you look at my nonprofit experience, all of it surrounds children. And I believe that every child from time of conception has the right to come into this world, be well prepared for school, and, you know, develop into an adult that can give back to the community as well. So pro-life is something that I do hold near and dear to my heart. And I think we, you know, have been given a task to protect the unborn.
Well, I agree, and I know a lot of our listeners and followers deeply care about that issue, and I'm sure they're encouraged to hear that they have another voice for life and the vulnerable inside the legislature. And Senator, you have already hit the ground running and actually introduced a bill, LB 747, on the first day of the legislature. Could you tell us a little bit about what that bill does?
Yes. So LB 747 is a bill that would put bottle clubs. So what a bottle club is it is a private club in which people can pay a yearly or monthly or nightly membership in order to go into. Those clubs don't necessarily sell alcohol in them. So these individuals join the club and therefore they're allowed to bring in their own alcohol. Well, because of that, they have found a loophole, and because they're not selling alcohol and they're bringing in their own alcohol, they are not under the control of the Liquor Commission. So most of these clubs can stay open until 5 o'clock in the morning. And so you can have people drinking in there from whenever they walk in the door till 5 a.m. It's a public safety issue. I can say, being the mom of three children, I certainly don't, when my daughter's on her way to school, want somebody leaving a club at 5 in the morning, or even the people who are commuting to work or just getting off of work. I feel they could be, their lives could be in jeopardy if somebody has been sitting there drinking that long.
Well, this bill has drawn some attention already, but it seems like really what you're just trying to do is make sure that everyone is playing by the same rules and that there's no loopholes.
Correct.
Being exploited to get around the law and make sure that our communities are kept safe. And you're not really trying to go after, you know, house parties or things like that. This is only for formally recognized clubs where people are going to drink, but they don't have to follow other common sense rules and regulations that other bars and nightclubs do.
Correct. And so, yes, I'm going after formal businesses, not, you know, not people's homes. Not this is a business that is being run, and it is being run like a nightclub, as you said. And all nightclubs have to follow the rules of the Liquor Commission, and they charge cover fees to get in as well. And so when I look at these clubs, to me, it's a cover fee. It might be an expensive cover fee, but it's a cover fee. And so they really truly are a nightclub. They should be under the control of the Liquor Commission. Liquor Commission helps establish rules. It helps to make sure that there's responsible drinking going on and that we don't have people leaving at 5 a.m. who have been drinking all night long.
Right. And so as I understand it and look at your bill, all you're simply asking is just that they actually get a license from the Liquor Control Commission and follow those rules. This isn't about just shutting anyone who wants to do this down. It's just making sure that there's a process and a common sense system that's in place. Is that right?
That is correct. I'm not about shutting down businesses. However, I am about, as you said, an even playing field. And if they're going to operate like a nightclub, they need to be treated like a nightclub. And I said to somebody the other day, if it was a business, you know, other businesses could come in. I know there's like wine and painting businesses. So they could decide, well, we're going to paint all night. We're not going to sell the wine. Bring in your own wine. I would feel the same way. They should not be open until 5 in the morning. So it doesn't matter what type of club you are. If you are charging a fee and appear to be a nightclub, you should be under the control of the Liquor Commission.
Well, I know the Nebraska Family Alliance is supporting this bill, and we're glad to see that you are addressing this issue. We know it's been an issue that others have thought about addressing before and that the Liquor Control Commission is asking for, so we're very encouraged by your efforts. So, Senator, as you've got a little bit of experience down the legislature and things are going to start picking up, what are your expectations as the session unfolds for what we might expect?
Well, I expect to see a lot of talk and debate surrounding tax reform. I am very excited for the State of the State addressed by the governor on January 10th, as I think he will come out with a proposal for some common sense tax reform. I am looking forward to working with some other senators on some cleanup language of bills so that we're helping, kind of deregulate things. Another bill of mine that's not getting much attention because it's not, it's a little bit boring, but it sort of maintains things. And so it has to deal with superintendents of highways in the Class A and Class B licenses and getting them just on the same renewal term. And so it's, although that doesn't seem like a great, big, gigantic bill, it does help for, fiscal responsibility. If we can just get them on the same renewal term, they're just renewing every 3 years rather than people having to spend money and come back year after year. And so there's a lot of little things like that that are going on as well that will make an impact. And once those little things all build up, I think we can make a huge impact in the budget.
Absolutely. Senator, my last question for you. We talk a lot about trying to engage people in the political process and to be involved. And I know you're now sacrificing a lot of time away from your work and family. What was it that led you to be willing to actually enter in to that political process and be very engaged and really step up, not just from being involved with nonprofits, but actually being a voice inside the legislature?
Well, first, stepping up to nonprofits, I felt I've been very blessed, and so I wanted to give back to the community. I, again, have a love for children, and so, nonprofit-wise, whatever I could do to help children in the community. And that kind of grew into watching my sister, who is also in the political realm, and she's been a great mentor to me, and watching the impact and the differences that she could make at a city level, as well as the support that's offered to me by my husband, my children, my parents, all of my family helped me make the decision that, wow, it would be great to be able to make a difference, enter the political arena, and get down to Lincoln and do a job that a senator is supposed to do and, help our state continue to be the great state that it is.
Senator Thibodeau, representative of District 6 right here in Omaha, thank you so much for your service to our state and stepping up to answer the call, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you again for inviting me. It has been a pleasure.
To stay up to date on all the latest happenings in the Nebraska legislature and be empowered with information, resources to keep you informed and empower you to make a difference, visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. and join the movement to help advance family, freedom, and life here in our state. One issue that is back again in the Nebraska legislature is assisted suicide. And tragically, on December 30th, we said goodbye to one of our dear friends and allies and really the leading voice fighting against assisted suicide, J.J. Hansen, who was the president of the Patients' Rights Action Fund and was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer back in 2014. And in spite being given just months to live, he chose to fight every day and lived years beyond his diagnosis, even fathering another child with his wife because of that decision to choose to live and reject the option that he had with assisted suicide. I was honored to get to know J.J. Hansen. He had visited Nebraska previously to help us in our work here opposing assisted suicide. And just earlier last year, he was a guest on this very show with his wife, Chris. And we know he is going to be deeply missed by so many. And so in honor of J.J., who came to fondly be known as the Man of Steel, the Patients' Rights Action Fund is asking for people to share his story one last time in his memory, and so that's what I'm going to do here. In honor of JJ, here is his story as both he and his wife Chris tell it.
My family has had a motto someone would complain about. I can't go out to school today because I'm sick. And my dad's response would be, you can't hurt steel. I was very active growing up, did a lot of sports, played football. My family has a long line of military service, specifically the Marine Corps. While I was in the Marine Corps, I got married to my wife, Chris.
Life couldn't have been more perfect. We had just had James. He was 1 year old. We had moved to Florida. JJ had a job that he absolutely loved.
We were living what people would consider as the American dream. May of 2014, I started to feel what felt like a very deep anxiety attack. And I knew something was wrong with me because it just kept getting worse. And at that point, my ability to speak began to go away.
My phone rang, and I saw it was JJ's number on my caller ID. And I answered it, and a woman's voice was on the phone. She was a paramedic. She was with JJ. He had had a grand mal seizure.
They started doing tests. They weren't going to do an MRI initially. However, my wife, Chris, pushed them very heavily to do an MRI.
The neurologist came back in and looked at us, and I'll never forget the look on his face when he told us, "You have two lesions in your left temporal lobe."
Grade 4 glioblastoma multiforme, which is one of the, if not the deadliest form of brain cancer that exists. The neurosurgeon who conducted the biopsy said that the cancer was inoperable. You have 4 months to live. In a best case scenario, you may get a year.
And that was it. He walked away.
When a week before that, you were running, you were having fun, you were hanging out with your kid and your wife, you were working, and everything seemed fine. And all of a sudden, a man comes in and says, "You're gonna die." You don't just accept it because someone said it. We had one doctor that told us that, "Go home, enjoy the time you have left." And yet another doctor said, "We got this, no problem, we'll get it out."
He had the surgery at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and he had an amazing neurosurgeon. They monitored to see if he was having seizures that we just couldn't see. Over the next 24 hours, he had 9 more seizures. So by the time that was done, he couldn't talk at all.
Would this be easier if I just gave up? If I just said, "This is too much of a burden on my family, the pain is difficult, I don't want to deal with this." What if I just said I had enough and ended it? I would be okay the next day because I would be gone. I wouldn't feel the pain. I wouldn't feel the emotion. They do. My wife would feel it for the rest of her life. My son would not have one more day to spend with me.
No matter how bad those days were, we had to fight for James. James makes us stronger.
I still have cancer today. I still have active cancer cells. I'm still on chemo. And I have people say all the time, "You don't look like it. You don't look like you have active cancer." It's because every single part of my day I spend towards improving my ability to live. I followed the Brittany Maynard case. To a certain extent, I could identify with what she was dealing with. Same disease, roughly the same age, both had families, but I don't agree with what she chose to do. You can't unmake that choice. Once you do it, it's done. Unless a cure is found, the disease will come back. When and how, I don't know. My hope and my fight is to keep it at bay for as long as possible.
I'd say my biggest fear with assisted suicide is that a patient will go to a doctor who already views them as a terminal patient and sees little hope for anything else, any other treatment options, any other outcomes other than death.
Chris has saved my life. And she did that while being a mother, while paying the bills. I didn't have to ask for it. I didn't have to need it. She did it because she loved me. And she's my best friend. And I couldn't imagine being with anybody else besides her.
You are more my hero now than I ever thought possible. And I love you, and you're my best friend.
Every single day is a gift, and you can't let that go.
That was the story of JJ Hansen and his journey in his own words, and he will be deeply missed by many. But his memory and his efforts to fight assisted suicide will certainly live on. As always, for more information on the Nebraska legislature and issues affecting family, freedom, and life, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. I'm your host, Nate Gross, hoping you'll join us next week Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.